second speaker, Eleanor Wisley, who is an activist with Sisters of Freedom, but also does all sorts of other things. And she'll be talking to us about disabled women being invisible and the other in feminism and climate change.
First of all, I'd start with saying I'm not an academic, obviously. You already said I'm an activist, so no PowerPoint. And I haven't been doing a paper or a PhD, so my thoughts aren't sort of organized, you know, in that sort of way. And I'm hoping that this would be more like a conversation and not just random thoughts for me. First of all, thank you, Maria, for inviting me. I actually had a history with Coventry. I lived here for 8 years. I moved back to the UK from France. Before that, I did a master's in the States. Moved back to France, couldn't get a job. Then came back from the UK because, strangely enough, Coventry University offered me a job. So I moved back to Coventry, and I'm starting there because a lot of my thoughts and what I've learned in the UK started off in Coventry. And with this subject, and this is where I met Maria in the Coventry Women's Voices. So I had no thoughts about feminism or anything before that. I was a full-time mother and wife, and then I went off and became a full-time student, and came back to UK, then I was, full-time work. So let me start with Coventry Women's Voices, and I'm not getting at them or, you know, because this is where I started, so this is my experience, I'm telling my experience. Let me start first that when it comes to disabled women, most disabled women I know do not connect with feminism at all, because they don't see themselves represented in the so-called feminist world, because they don't feel included. And this is why I'm going to give you examples of, you know, my experiences with Coventry Women's Voices. And again, I said I'm not getting at them. It's just an experience to illustrate. One of the things that the first thing is that, oh, let's go to the theater together. Yeah. Do you realize that when you're a wheelchair user, you can't sit with everybody else in the theater? You have to have your own segregated seat. So, you know, how do you go and bond with people, so to speak? You know, you go to pubs, very often they're not accessible. I know you have accessible pubs in Coventry. So that's just like an example. And things like, you know, we did research. I'm sure some of you know that there was research on sexual harassment on the streets in Coventry, and I was asked as one of the participants. And I had to really think, no, nobody has ever whistled at me at the street. Nobody has ever called that kind of names that you normally associate when you talk about sort of things. So these sort of things, these sort of thoughts, you know, and I've talked to other disabled women, it makes you think that maybe you're not really, you know, a normal woman because you don't experience that kind of thing. I know that's not true, but for a lot of disabled women, that's how they feel, you know, that you're not in that kind of category because you don't fall into that. And that goes along, you know, with sort of feminism, that you are invisible in that, because a lot of the things that are considered important in feminism, you are not included. Let me talk about networking. I think somebody was saying earlier on about networking. You know, you go, I think it was about Trump, you know, the importance about networking. Now, again, I'm speaking from my own experience. Oh, by the way, I should give a proviso, is that I'm speaking here from my own personal experience. I'm not speaking as from Sisters of Rita. For networking. Now, I actually have a postgraduate certificate in how to start a business from Coventry University. So a lot of those things, you know, you go for networking. Now, if you're a wheelchair user, and it's not just me, I and my friend Sarah, we gave this training to a whole lot of advertisers about how to include disabled people. We said both the same thing. When you go to a networking event, you go, as a wheelchair user, everybody moves out of your way and say, oh, we're sorry, are we in your way? Nobody wants to stop to talk to you because they think, I don't know why. So you end up at the end of the room. You haven't talked to anybody and you're too embarrassed to sort of say, well, actually, no, I wanted to talk to you. is that sort of part of feminism? And it's, I'm saying this is because when it is, because whenever you're in any situation, when you're a disabled person, you could be going to a specific talk on Sylvia Plath, and your conversation inevitably would be turned to how inaccessible something is. Or people will, you know, start talking to you in that subject because they think that that's the only thing that you would be interested in. Never mind that you could, you know, you could be talking about literature or architecture or gardening. You know, those kind of subjects will always end up with how inaccessible transport is, how inaccessible toilets are. Big subject of mine, accessible toilets. You also get men coming to you, and I've had that a couple of times, doesn't matter where you are. Can I ask you a personal question? Yeah? How do you get into bed? Well, how's that relevant? Why would anybody ask you that? You know, and when I'm feeling really I've had a couple of drinks, I might say, what's that to you? I'm not going to bed with you. You know, and how is that, you know, that kind of questions never come up in feminism. Nobody, when you go to feminist talks, nobody talks about that. And let me move somewhere else, not Coventry Women's Voices. The launch of the Women's Equality Party. Now, I was invited to the policy making bit on violence against women. The launch of Women's Equality Party was in an inaccessible venue. So I thought I'm duty bound to say, hey, this is an inaccessible venue. And to their credit, they changed it overnight. I don't know, maybe they thought I'd come and protest outside. I wasn't going to do that. But, you know, they changed the venue. So I'm just sort of saying that, you know, that because I'm asked to talk about being invisible and the other. And it's very difficult to sort of enter those kind of avenues, agencies, whatever, and bring those to the table, because they're not always seen to be relevant to everybody. And I'm talking across the board, even in places like Philia. I don't know if any of you know Philia. Feminism in London, they have a conference. So that's why I'm saying that most disabled women I know sort of don't engage in sort of feminist, because I think they tried, or as it's been pointed out to me, I think the Women's Equality Party in Camden, probably, I can't remember where it is, have their meeting upstairs in a pub where they can't get to. Now, and I've been told that, I said, well, you expect me to do about that? Go and complain. So it's even if you, before you even get to the subject of feminism, you have all that access issues, all that sort of stuff to can sort out before you can even get into the room. So why are you invisible? Maybe because you couldn't get there. The other reason is sometimes people are embarrassed to talk to you. That's just that awkward moment, and Scope's got all of those on TV, which I find a bit cringing. But there they are. So we talk about abortion. Well, that's a big thing in feminism. Let me qualify that. When I talked about feminism, I've never studied feminism, and I'm not brought up in England. So my idea of feminism, or my experience of feminism, is very different. At the moment, I'm studying feminism in China, or the start of feminism in China, and I am asked to talk in a radio show. So I watch a lot of Chinese dramas at the moment, because my excuse is that I'm trying to brush up my Mandarin, but actually it's just, you know, so I have an excuse to watch Chinese dramas. But I think my next talk is about gender, women and gender in and sort of in the romance drama in Chinese dramas. But what I'm saying is, like, abortion is very important in the sort of feminist, when you talk about feminism and all that. I'm for free choice, obviously. But when you're a disabled person, it's very nuanced. How do you feel like in Iceland there's going to be nobody with Down syndrome, because they're going to abort them all? You know, a friend of mine wrote in Facebook, and she's a dear friend, and I know her, and I can't criticize or whatever. She's made a decision to abort a child because they told her that this child is going to have OI. I can't remember what it actually stands for, but it means brittle bones. And she said she didn't think she could cope with it. And I'm going, I have so many friends who are brittle bones. If all their mothers decided to abort them, do you see the difference? Do you see the difficulties? You know. But then I was thinking, what about girl children that get aborted all the time as well? How do you equate that? And then in this country, under the new two-child policy for benefits. I don't know if any of you are aware of that.
Mm-hmm.
If you have three children, you're not going to get child tax credits. And so the couple or whatever, you know, whatever the reason for having had the child, could be accidental, could be they didn't know when this law was passed, because nobody told them, nobody knew that this law was going to be passed. suddenly, if they have their third child, they're not going to be able to survive financially. So it's all right for the royal family to have as many children as they like, but not if you're a poor person. You know, all those sort of things, yes. So that's another issue when it comes to, like, abortion. Then that's the big, big elephant in the room, austerity. Because austerity affects women, but it affects disabled women extra, as you say, you know, we don't want to go into who's the worst affected, that sort of thing. But austerity affects women in disabled women in terms of benefits, in the term of all the facilities, you know, the inability to go to the library because it's closed. Yeah, I know that because I campaigned against that in Coventry. I campaigned on the steps of the city council on the rights of disabled children being able to have their transport to go to school and stuff like that. So it affects everybody. I've been also, intersectionality is a very important thing, and none of us have single issues. We all have different identities. So again, if you're disabled, you're a woman, if you're a woman, person of color, LGBT, you know, if you're a trans person, you know, all that adds up. And I had this discussion with a friend and I came up with this and she really likes it. I said, when it comes to intersectionality, because obviously many of us have many identities, it's like we eat at many tables because you have different identities. But you're never actually properly invited. You're never actually properly seated at any of the tables because you're always the other. Because you might be the AME, but if you're disabled, they might not accept you. Or there's this huge stigma, etc. You know, if I've got friends who are LGBT who have acquired disability, and they feel really, really upset, not because so much just the disability, but because all the stuff, all the community stuff that they've been able to access, they can't anymore because all the meetings are upstairs in the pub, or, you know, they can't get the people to move. So I don't know how am I doing for time. Then there's the talk about victims. Today I was reporting hidden victims, and this was in Sheffield, where they found that 24% of the people who have domestic abuse have disability, 63% are not working, 18 to 24% have mental illness, and these are called hidden victims. Talk about hidden victims as an activist. It's not just going to protest. It's a lot of work. For example, I contribute to the shadow reports for women. It's called CEDAW, which stands for the Convention of All Forms of Elimination of Discrimination Against Women. It's a UN thing, and it is happening right now. We just submitted it. And all this sort of evidence that we have to put together to say how disabled women, alongside with other women and communities, suffering in the UK. And you were mentioning human rights. And I say, there's no point in having human rights under the UN or anywhere else if we don't have legal access. If we don't have access to those rights, there's no point. Because you can't, if you can't access those rights, what's the point of having them? Right. We're going to be followed by a poet. So I hope you don't mind. Just that one of it. I'm going to read a poem, which I think will be a nice touch. This is a poem I've written about 20 years ago, so no. I just thought that it just reads the sort of intersectionality and feminism and all that together. I called it The Man Under an Umbrella because I've never published it and I've not really given it a title. Amidst the din and fury of the storm, the acrid and steamy heat, the fat raindrops that fell in rivulets down gutters, the percussion as they hit on the cars and the roofs, the blaring horns and the cacophony of scurrying pedestrians, bicycles, trishaw drivers, school children, and traffic all wending their way, I saw a young man in white under a waxed umbrella, continuing unconcerned, calm, unhurried, as if in a reverie. He came into my vision like an exercise in Zen. Then he stopped under an awning into the depths of a herbalist shop. I caught my breath, awed by this impression of serenity. Would he be caught in the same confusion morass, convinced in the jaundiced prejudice for the male child, assured in his chauvinistic pride of place? Would he believe in karma? Would he delegate disability to neuter me even more to a life without passion and love? That scar, still raw and red from childhood, denigrates my sense of womanhood, that I was charmed by, useless, destined as life, one of life's debris. I have never sought the love of men of my race, for fear of that image mirrored in their dark eyes, my self-esteem fragile, slowly built abroad in the land of strangers. Now I catch myself daring to look at men and secretly weave a dream for a talisman to bind up those ancient wounds for the girl child who would allow herself to be healed back into the fold. That's written in 1997. Thank you.